Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau.
I'm back!
Yeah, again, I think people picked that up from the intro.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah,
well, it's good to have you back, because we're going to do another review. And Wayne and I were talking afterwards that we probably agree too much on things.
I was thinking that listening. When I was listening, I was chomping at the bit to jump in there. No, I don't think so! But so, yeah, rather than actually jumping in and voicing my disagreements on the God Machine review from last time, we're actually going to be reviewing Blood and Smoke, the Strix Chronicles, which is the new World of Darkness release for Vampyre. And since it uses the World of Darkness mechanics, including all the updates from the God Machine, we figure a lot of the things that I think will come up in this discussion as well. So we don't need to spend any extra time on, you know, little old me.
Hadn't planned on it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, all about you. Maybe one of us should have said that,
yeah,
Chris.
Yeah, glad you guys laughed. Otherwise, I would have been like, was that too harsh? No? Okay.
Now, we're hoping this review will run for one episode, so roughly an hour, but we were hoping that the God Machine Chronicles would run for an hour.
Yeah, how did we ever, like, that was like a big mistake thing. That was going to run for an hour, but
that was pretty epic.
You and I do like to talk.
That's true. So yeah, we're going to dispense with all the, you know, what movies we've seen and other kinds of introduction and get right to it. So this is certainly a book that we've been looking forward to for a long time. So,
10 years now?
Well, okay, maybe a long time is misleading.
Yeah, because hey, the Requiem just came out. I can't wait to see the next version.
Yeah. I get to the end of it, and it's like, I don't even want to play this. I want the sequel. So as with our other review episodes, this is a read-through review, which means that we have not played this game. We do have experience playing Vampire Requiem and Vampire Masquerade, but not Blood and Smoke, the Strix Chronicles. And we are reviewing a PDF copy. And full disclosure, we're reviewing a review PDF copy, so we have not paid for Blood and Smoke, the Strix Chronicles. And I think they just announced today, Onyx Publishing just announced today that the print version will be available for Blood and Smoke now. Now, Blood and Smoke, the Strix Chronicles, is the latest incarnation of White Wolf's vampire game, which started '91 with the Vampire the Masquerade. For those unfamiliar with Vampire, this is, it would be fair to say, White Wolf's flagship line, where characters play vampires. So if you think of True Blood, or Interview with a Vampire, or Near Dark, then that would give you a rough idea what it would be like to play in this world. Mm-hmm. It is set in the World of Darkness, which is a world much like our own. So a modern setting, but of course a little bit darker. The conspiracies that people talk about may or may not be true. The supernatural walk the world. It also uses the storyteller system, and that system uses dice pools consisting of D10s. The other aspect of the storytelling system, which is going to become important for this review, is it touts itself as more focused on the story than a typical role-playing game. So the idea is that the players are definitely contributing to the story as opposed to participating in an adventure.
Mm-hmm. More of a book than a game.
And that's another good point for Chris raised. So the vampire books and the White Wolf books in general tend to spend a lot of time introducing a narrative or introducing a story, including giving game information in that way. So if you look at the fluff versus crunch, White Wolf books tend to be more on the fluff side. Mm-hmm.
And they write everything in kind of that fluff voice too. Even the rules are written in a very almost poetic kind of fashion, referring and relating to the fluff consistently.
That's pretty much what I was going to say too. Like sometimes it can be difficult to separate, fluff from mechanics or fiction from mechanics. You know, unlike some other books where they present all of the, you know, gazetteer stuff as its own chapter, and all of the rules mechanics are, you know, a separate chapter that can be fairly dry depending on the writing. World of Darkness books kind of blend those together.
Mm-hmm. In a good way.
And for those familiar with Vampire the Masquerade or Vampire Requiem, Blood and Smoke's The Strix Chronicle is very much a Vampire the Requiem game. It's very recognizable. Although it does bring in elements from Vampire the Masquerade.
That's right, yeah.
So in this review, we're going to divide it between setting and rules, which doesn't exactly correspond to how the book is laid out, but it's something that we think would be a little bit more understandable, a little bit more accessible to the average listener.
And at the end, we'll probably give our thumbs up, thumbs down review.
Or thumbs sideways if you're...
as is usually the case, right?
Yeah.
Well, the first thing I notice is that this is a terrible title for a book.
Okay, why?
Especially in the internet age. I tried going on YouTube so that I could listen to some videos while I was working, just as kind of background noise. You type in Blood and Smoke, even adding in Vampire, the Strix Chronicle, and all that stuff. All you get is tons of videos about marijuana usage.
With blood?
Yeah, even with blood. Like, I mean, seriously, going in all the way to, like, Blood and Smoke, Strix Chronicle, Vampire RPG game review, and still, it was just page after page of people telling you how to make bowls and blunts and things like that.
Well, you know, it hasn't been out for that long, so...
I suppose, but I don't know. It's just, I was surprised. I suppose it just goes to show how important choosing a unique-sounding title is in the internet age.
You know what? I would have said Blood and Smoke, The Strix Chronicle is pretty dang unique.
You'd think so, right? How often do people use the word Strix, but even that didn't help the search? No, actually, I don't think it's actually a poor title by itself, but man, it was hard to find online.
You know, I think of all the things that people could make their own opinion of without having to listen to the review was the title. But it's good that you've weighed in on that one.
It wasn't really so much a review as a rant, but...
get it out of the way first, like a Band-Aid, exactly. Right off in one pull. There you go.
All right. So, what I was kind of hoping for, not just the title, was a little bit of a setup of the setting. Again, for people who might not be so familiar with Vampire Requiem or Vampire Masquerade... What are the big points in the setting?
I think you kind of... Well, to set it up for someone who has never played or is unfamiliar with Vampire in any of its incarnations, it's pretty much a modern-day vampire story. You play vampires in, you know, pretty much current times, and that's the elevator pitch for the game, essentially.
Yeah, if anyone's seen the TV show True Blood, it that follows really closely to the kind of in-world fiction that Vampire has, so much so that I well imagine that the writers, producers, what have you, are avid players of this game, as a guess. But it's kind of goes into where it's the more modern movie version of vampires, in that sunlight, fire, things like that, they do hurt the vampires, but... they aren't hurt by garlic or crosses. They don't sparkle, so that one's not out there. Yeah. It actually does a really good job of pulling in all the different kinds of fiction throughout the ages of different kind of vampires, but it weaves it in very interesting ways. So even though your general vampire is not harmed by garlic, that is something that you can actually bring on them through certain things. But we'll get into that later on when we get into character creation, but yeah.
Now, like the previous incarnations, Blood and Smoke uses clans. It uses the same clans as Vampire the Requiem.
Right.
So the five clans, and each one of these is a kind of a classic vampire. You have your Anne Rice style vampire. You have your Near Dark style, you know, the punk vampire.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Your behind the scenes manipulator.
Yeah, your corporate vampire.
And of course, the classic Nosferatu in the clan called Nosferatu.
Right.
So. Shock!
So it's still sticking to the five clans that Requiem uses. And the vampires are born, if you will, into these clans. And then after that, they generally choose an affiliation represented by covenants. And this is something that Requiem introduced. So, and the covenants are still the same as Requiem. So you have Invictus, sort of the royalty, the Carthians, more of the rebels, as well as the Circle of the Crone. You know, your Lilith worshippers.
Right. And mm-hmm. the Lancia Sanctum, which is, you know, the religious wing. And then you have
Ordo Dracul.
Yeah, yeah, the Ordo Dracul.
The Sons of Dracula.
Yeah, the kind of the scientists a little bit. So now one thing that was different from Requiem and the Strix Chronicles in terms of fiction. When you go through the covenants in Blood and Smoke, they give you a couple pages of they give you a couple page rundown of, you know, a little bit of fiction that kind of highlights what the covenant is about. Then they kind of go into a little bit more explanation. But one thing I really appreciated was a section, actually two sections, called When We're in Power and When We're in Trouble. Because a couple of the covenants from Vampire the Requiem, I had trouble imagining what a city run by them would look like, especially Circle of the Crone. Not so much Lantia Sanctum, because you could imagine, like, you know, a religious city-state, but these two new sections in Blood and Smoke, When We're in Power and When We're in Trouble, answered those questions for me. They said, this is what an Invictus-controlled domain would look like. This is what a Circle of the Crone-controlled, you know, domain would look like. And not in, like, super hard specifics, but I got a much better idea of what the covenants were about with those new sections. So I thought that was a great addition.
I like that as well, Wayne, and I liked how they did something similar with the clans and how they present the clans. Each clan is presented much like a character class might be in another type of book,
right,
or another type of game. And we're seeing this more in games, was where they try to explain things like why you want to play this character. I mean, we saw that, I think, in like Dungeons & Dragons, when they talk, why is this the best alignment to be?
I think we saw it in 13th Age, too, didn't we?
Yeah. And what they do for the clans is they have these three questions. Why you want to be us, why you should fear us, and why we should fear ourselves, which, for people unfamiliar with Vampire, is a constant theme in that you're playing a monster, and it's not always cool. I mean, there are things that you should explore when you're playing these monsters, both why it's so great, but also why it's such a horrible existence. Not as angsty, I think, as you might think in a like an Anne Rice book, maybe. But you could
though
certainly
some groups
do
might
so.
Like that.
Yeah, but, although you certainly could play that. So I did like that a lot as well, and I think that helped people to understand who these clans are. And it's presented very much, as Chris and Wayne were saying, in character or in setting.
Right.
Like a member of the clan is talking to you and explaining what it's like to be this clan. And that is something that I think White Wolf, it definitely walks the line between presenting rules very clearly and presenting rules and concepts within the setting, within setting. And sometimes things are a bit opaque because they do that. Sometimes it's absolutely fantastic because it really draws you in and you really, you know, embrace the themes. And I think in the clan, one thing I didn't like is that they seem to try to strip away as many rules as possible. So then when they're presenting something like a disadvantage or a curse, like every clan has it, it's not clearly articulated. It's articulated in very in-setting.
Oh, so you're talking about the clan banes, which I think used to be called clan weakness. But
yeah, and that's a new term, and it's going to come up in a thing called bane. Yeah, a weakness, a curse, a disadvantage. And it's presented very much in setting. And even though I've played Masquerade and Requiem, I'm still was guessing what they were trying to say with this. And all I was trying to do, is it kind of the same as it was before, or is it different? And in some cases you could go, yeah, I guess that's going to be the same, or very similar. And some of them you're like, I'm not really sure what they're trying to say here. So as somebody who's not familiar with this game, when I see like something like Clan Bane, and it goes the Feral Curse, and then explains without giving me any mechanics or anything like that, you know, I'm not really going to understand why it's bad to play the Gangrel or the Maquette.
Right. Well, I think it's kind of a trade-off because on the one hand, I like that a lot of stuff is presented with only fiction, and they haven't cluttered up the sections with mechanics because we haven't gotten to mechanics yet, and the beginning of the book is very much, you know, kind of like a gazetteer, like other games would have a gazetteer, and this is kind of all in fiction. So on the one hand, I like that, but I do see what you're saying where, okay, I see this Clan Bane. I want to know what it does in a mechanical sense because we are playing a game, and I'm going to have to jump ahead to figure out what that is. So I think it's kind of a damned if you do, damned if you don't.
You mentioned that in the God Machine review as well, Wayne, that there were a few sections, and I noticed it as well when I was reading through, where they say that this relies on these mechanics, which are presented later on in the book. And they do link it, but it's not quite the best organization, I think.
Yeah, but
that in the last review, is we did say that in some cases it's really good that when they do link it, and they have a hyperlink, and you can just jump to it in a PDF. I imagine in the book, you'll just flip to the page number.
Right.
But they're inconsistent, and this is one of the things where they are inconsistent. I'm going to disagree with you, Wayne, because they actually have terms that you're not going to have any idea until you read later in the book, such as disciplines.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're not even going to guess that these are powers because it's just animalism, proteum, resilience. Again, using the Gangrel, the savage vampires, as our example.
Right.
And this is actually a big difference for people who are familiar with Requiem, is that in Blood and Smoke, the clans are presented almost at the very beginning of the book, whereas in Requiem, they were presented within the character creation section. So they were starting to introduce the terms and the rules of and what these things are, and then you have the clans, which incorporate this terminology, and it's and I understand why they were doing it, because characters are even more so than a game like Dungeons and Dragons, using that as our classic game example. Character is so central to the game. And characters are so central to the story, like more so than in another type of role-playing game. So I can understand, let's put the characters right at the front. In Requiem, these organizations that Wayne talked about, the Covenants, they're actually presented before the clans in Requiem. And maybe that's why they were so vague, because they presented them so early in the book. They're like, well, what are we going to say?
You know, I've been looking at this with eyes that already know about the game and, you know, what a vampire in Vampire the Game is. But I wonder if that might be confusing to a new player, because they jump into the clans right away. The only thing before that is kind of one of those short stories that they have. So it's almost that they define the different kinds of vampire before they really get into what a vampire is.
And that's another good point. I mean, we're looking at page 18, mm-hmm. and something that it's actually spread out throughout the book, but like, for example, page 84 tells you some of the cool tricks and powers of a vampire that all vampires get.
Yeah.
So, and that would be perhaps my main criticism with this book, and there's a lot that I do like, and you'll hear a lot of the things I love about this book, but probably my main criticism is that I didn't care for the organization so much, and I don't always think that was that's a strength of White Wolf books, is the organization.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because they do walk that line between I want to present this in a creative way versus I want to present this in a
straight
clear
way.
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. And they will often fall on the side of creative. And more so than Requiem is more fresh in my mind, so I'll say that. More so than Requiem, there was times I was going, what? You know, why are you presenting this here? Or I haven't mm-hmm. gotten to this other stuff yet. And then I would find myself flipping more than I found in Requiem.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, am I just not remembering it? And now when I can see things like this, you know, Clan is presented way before Requiem. And I do a side-by-side comparison, I now see why that was coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So.
No, that's a good point, and I thought the same thing. Like, I came into Vampire with Requiem, and I said this before the episode, reading Requiem when I got my copy of the book, I never felt lost, even as a new player, kind of, you know, with that game, where, and maybe this get, you know, I'll just briefly touch on it because it gets into more mechanical stuff, but reading Strix, I was flipping back and forth a lot because it's exactly as you said, Lyle, I don't know what this term means yet, especially with the more mechanical stuff, and yeah, there were hyperlinks just like in God Machine, and so I was able to, like, you know, click and jump to the next section, but yeah, it was still a little bit difficult, and there were times that I felt lost as someone who was already somewhat familiar with the game and the setting and the mechanics. So,
and we're also somewhat familiar with the terms introduced in this book because we had previously read God Machine Chronicle.
Right.
So we have a clear advantage, and still there's points where we're like, well, what is that?
Right.
One, I will make a case for why they put it in the beginning. And I remember when I first picked up Vampire the Masquerade in a game store, and I was flipping through it, and then I hit the clans, and that was the first thing I read.
Right.
And that sold me on the game. And I'm wondering if they think, well, hey, that's what people want to read right away, so let's put it in the beginning. However, you because of the way the clans are presented, they have like a nice bold title, so it's and they have a, you know, a full vampire in front of you. So, in other words, it says this is important part of the game. You could slap it in the middle of the book, and when you flip through it, like I'm sure everybody does with a new book, you're going to stop at clan and go, oh, cool.
Yeah, not to keep hammering at it, but I was actually flipping through Requiem as we were talking, and we got a little tiny blurb, just like a paragraph and a half, of what the clans were in the beginning of the book. But as you said, that Lyle, then we were not introduced to the clans properly, including mechanics, until after character creation, where we were told what the parts of a character are and what they all mean, and now here's the clans and here's what they're about and what they do, so you can kind of see, oh, you know, David gets, you know, their favorite attributes are, you know, dexterity and manipulation. I know what those are, so I see what this clan is about. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. However, like a lot of things with Onyx Publishing, who've taken over producing the White Wolf stuff, I can definitely see a reason for the change. And when we talk about rules later on and things like that, we definitely see the reason, even if we don't necessarily agree with it or love it at this particular point. Right. And this is a case where I understand why they would present it, and the argument would be, hey, love the vampire, don't love the mechanics that are attached to this clan.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point, yeah.
Did you like the idea of the savage? Great. Play it. Embrace it. And then find out what those things mean. And then you go, wow, Protean is awesome.
Or you do me and you're like, hey, let's find out what that Deva curse does in Strix Chronicles. Oh my
doe.
God, yeah, doe, man, that blows.
Yeah, this guy kind of sucks.
Yeah.
You know, those ugly vampires are looking a little bit better now. Yeah. Now, perhaps the biggest change with the setting is, as the title suggests, that these things called Strix. And what they are is a primary antagonist for the vampires, in much the same way as way back in Masquerade, where there was the good vampires and the Camarilla. Good, I mean, go with me on the good vampire thing.
Relatively speaking.
Quote unquote,
versus the bad vampires and the Sabbat, until everybody wanted to play Sabbat, and then it rolled out all the books on how you can play these guys. So, much like maybe Mage the Ascension or Werewolf the Apocalypse, you definitely have a core opponent that is very different from the vampire. And if people don't want to just play exploring themselves, they now can play, okay, we have these opponents.
Mm-hmm. Well, coming in from New World of Darkness, to me this looked a lot like, well, yeah, like Werewolf the Forsaken, or even kind of like Changeling the Lost, where... Yeah, now you have, as you said, Lyle, this big bad that is kind of similar to us, but also very evil and different, and we want nothing to do with them, to the point where, like, a Strix incursion is cause for mass paranoia in the vampire population.
Yeah. Until everybody wants to play the Strix, and then they'll roll out the player's guide to the Strix.
Exactly right.
And they do include some pretty thorough rules on how to create Strix antagonists.
Like honestly, reading the Strix chapter, and I do like why it is a, I do like the fact that it is a separate chapter that I'll get to in a second, but reading that chapter, honestly, it struck me as, well, why couldn't someone play as a Strix? Because you have given us more than enough mechanics on how to do that, and they're similar enough to the vampire mechanics where you can call blood potency, shadow potency, and essentially be playing a Strix.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I thought the same.
Yeah, I mean, not that I wanted to play as a Strix, but...
No, that's for me.
Well, as we said last time, you're the, can I play a werewolf and vampire? No.
Before we go more into the mechanics of the Strix, or what they can and can't do, what are the Strix?
They are corpses.
Actually, vampires.
Yeah, that's like saying, hey,
corpses.
What's the god machine?
Oh, no, that was actually the line in the book. It was like, the vampires are like living incarnations of corpses or something like that.
It's the other way around. Hmm? Strix inhabit corpses. Kindred are corpses.
Oh, really? I got it backwards?
Yeah. For people who are from a kindred is what the vampires call themselves. So.
I don't know. The thing I got was kind of like the Strix is kind of like this, not exactly a ghost, but more kind of like a shapeless.
It's an owl.
Yeah, kind of.
Yeah, they're creatures made of smoke that are some kind of not vampire, but similar to, or demon, or evil monster thing that when they hold still, they take on the shape of owls. So they call them the birds of Dists, or they call them the owls.
Yeah, they come from Roman mythology.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was first introduced to them in the GURPS Blood Types book.
Yeah.
So they have, here's a classic vampire. It's actually a really good book if people can find it. But they introduce different types of vampires, such as the science fiction vampire, the I think you pronounce it Penegalan.
Oh, right.
Which is the Malaysian or Indonesian vampire.
I remember that one, yeah.
It's a head with guts.
Yeah, hanging out, yeah.
Yeah, and the Strix, which are bloodthirsty, kind of like witches, but also shape-changing, and yeah, one of the most common shapes is this owl. So.
Yeah, their basic powers are based around shadow, in that they can, you know, hide and disappear and jump through darkness, and more importantly is they can possess people or corpses or even other vampires.
Well, yeah, because that's all a vampire is a walking corpse. So.
Hmm. So, and that's why they're so dangerous to the kindred, the vampire society, is that they can take them over and they can use their own powers and faces against them. And, of course, being, you know, the big baddie, they are also consumed with a hatred of all things vampire and human and everything like that.
And part of their in-game mythology is that they destroyed at least one clan back in the Rome Dames. And that actually comes from a book that was introduced in Vampire the Requiem, Requiem for Rome. And that's something that we didn't mention, but they do show with both for the Covenants and the clans is previous clans or former clans.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them, is the clan that the Strix took out, which I like that part because it was not crowding you with a lot of clans. They're still trying to stick to that core five, at least for now.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But they're saying, but here are some other clans and what they did, and maybe you want to play them, and you know,
if you wanna.
Yeah, we're not gonna give you any rules, but you know, this is what they are or were. Mm-hmm. So I like that, and I like that with the Covenants as well. And it was like it gave people an idea how to, without saying, hey, you can create your own covenant. They were like, hey, here's a history.
Yeah.
You can actually be this defunct covenant. You could try to revive it, or you could, you know, or here's some ideas on how you can create your own covenant if you don't like what we're offering.
But that was also presented in fiction where, kind of like in God Machine Chronicles, you never really got an answer as to their demise being final.
Mm-hmm.
Like you would, the section would kind of end like, oh, like the laboratory was smashed and the only thing that has survived or that we've found so far has been, you know, written fragments. So it's assumed that they're dead.
Well, I think that's a strength of just the way they write is they leave everything open-ended. So there's so many different things and ways to chase down stories just out of the book, you know, even before you get into your own stuff.
Well, that's a really good point, Chris, and it's something that it's where Requiem deviated from Masquerade, as Masquerade had a very firm mythology. Everybody, all vampires are descended from Cain.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And you were generations away from Cain.
Mm-hmm.
And Requiem changed that and said, well, we don't really know what the mythology are. Here's some ideas.
Yeah, yeah.
Here's some origins.
This is what this clan thinks. This is what this clan thinks.
Yeah. Right. And even within the clan is like, here are three possible origins. And they present that, I think, pretty well here.
Yes,
and they,
yes.
And they continue that Requiem idea is like, we're not going to give you a definitive mythology or definitive origins. Here are some good ideas. And as Wayne was saying, and you were saying, Chris, about God Machine, it's like, well, what is the God Machine? Here are some ideas.
Hmm.
And I think Onyx Publishing and the new White Wolf here are doing a really good job with dropping those seeds.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. And what's nice is it leaves everything really open because there's all these seeds planted in. So you understand from the get-go that, you know, this is one that I want to use, so that means I should ignore the other ones. It kind of gives you a really open license. So when you get this far into the book, when you're reading about the Strix, if you happen to not like them, then you don't feel guilty about just leaving them out because the world doesn't feel nearly as set as in some other books.
That's exactly what I was going to say about why I like the fact that the Strix, or why I like and why I understand that the Strix chapter is a separate chapter. It's the only place we encounter the Strix.
Well, they're mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Fair enough. I mean, and
it's
okay,
actually kind of frustrating because they mention them very briefly earlier, and you're like, oh, I kind of want to see what these Strix are, and then you're like, and not yet.
Yeah,
not yet.
they don't come up until like the fifth chapter of the book.
Page 197.
Yeah, but part why I like that is because just like in the God Machine Chronicles, like it's not a default part of the setting. Well, just as you said, Chris, like if you do not want to play vampire, you know, Blood and Smoke with the Strix, you do not have to, because all of the rules and most of the mythologies is in this one chapter. So if you don't want them, just ignore it, and the game still works.
Are we still playing Blood and Smoke, but without the smoke? And we're playing the Strix Chronicle without the Strix?
So we're playing Blood the Chronicle.
Well, that sounds pretty cool,
Blood
though.
The Chronicle.
At least you won't get those marijuana.
There you go.
Yeah.
I don't know. I wonder if it wasn't keying off like Chronicle as Chronic or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think of that.
Yeah, probably. Oh, the search engine, yeah.
So, what do you guys think of the Strix?
Love them.
Yeah?
I really like them. I thought they did a good job with them.
Mm-hmm.
I liked, when we're talking about, we're going to get back to the mechanics, I think one of the reasons why they gave them a lot of rules, and of course, part of it is, you know, so people can play them, because they don't want to anyway. But also, they mention is like, there's not a lot of Strix, or they don't, they tend to be very solitary. So if you're going to make one and introduce it into your story, you should spend some time.
Right.
Make it count.
Yeah, definitely make it count. Let that Strix have a lot of minions and you know, like really truncated NPCs. But this is your supervillain. This is your boss. What video
boss
games
monster.
They call it?
Boss end boss. Character. This is your end boss.
End boss. Yeah.
There it is, yeah.
And
wow.
We just lost all of the gamer cred, didn't we?
We never had any.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I never really played Mario.
So. We know because you pronounce it Mario.
Yeah.
How are you supposed to pronounce it?
Mario.
Mario.
Oh, is it Mario?
Yes.
Yeah.
Super Mario. Mario? Why is it? Oh, because it's Japanese pronunciation?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Come on, only the Japanese would come up with like an Italian plumber who stomps on mushroom people while collecting coins.
Mario. Mm-hmm. I guess. No.
And actually, because of that, they forever changed the American pronunciation of the name, too.
Is it not Luigi?
Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was kind of on a roller coaster with them. At first, you know, just my awesome reflex kicked in, like, wow, owls made of smoke, that's so cool, wow, kind of thing. But, you know, after I was thinking about it a little bit, I kind of went a little bit against the idea because I thought one of the things that I really liked about vampires, how they are the top of the food chain in the whole world. You know, they kind of run the shadow society that runs the entire world, like the Illuminati. And so their drama is all internal. You know, it's about what other vampires are doing. It's about the paranoia and the social maneuvering inside there. So I thought kind of they don't really need the Strix for that aspect of the game. But then I jumped back with it thinking that no, because the way the Strix work, they inject more paranoia and more worry into that society. And I think that really can only amp up the aspects that I like about it. So yeah, in the end, I actually do quite like them.
And I guess I'm on the other side where, yeah, the Strix are awesome, and it's not that I dislike the Strix, and I definitely do like the sense of paranoia that they bring, because there's a section where, you know, one of the tests to see if you're a Strix basically they can walk in sunlight, pretty much. Yeah, or there was something that reminded me very much of witch trials, mm-hmm. where the solution is to kind of kill the vampire, and if they die, oh well, sorry, that wasn't a Strix. And that was really cool. But the thing I like about Vampire and the stories like I like to play in and tell are the kind of more gothic, you are the monster and how are you going to deal with that kind of thing. So it's not that I dislike the Strix, I just probably wouldn't want to play that because that's not what I like my vampire story to be about, this big bad.
I think it expanded the pie. I don't think it's zero sum where because we have another type of monster, you can't be the monster.
I wasn't saying that.
But. I mean, they still kept the Covenant, the Seven, and I think the Seven is where kind of the open ends. Hey, you tell us. We don't want to give you anything definitive. I think the Seven is actually kind of frustrating. It's like, who are the Seven? Vampires that kill vampires? Mm. Who are these guys?
And the storyteller is like, oh, crap, I don't know.
Yeah, and you're just, oh, okay, but do you really need to give me something so open? Right. You know, just write me a little paragraph seed. I mean, you're really good at that. So, but having this covenant called Seven and that you're not going to tell me anything. Whereas Strix, they actually give you information.
Hmm.
And this is what they are. And as Wayne said, if you don't want to play them, you don't have to play them. Or as Chris is alluding to, I mean, they can really heighten things.
Hmm.
I mean, just the fear that they might be involved is pretty exciting. And, yeah, it helps to explain some things. They say, here's vampire mythology and what people think work against vampires. For example, garlic. Oh, because maybe it was a Strix. Because Strix, as they get older, they get these different banes, disadvantages, curses. And they may be different from, like, what a vampire would get. So maybe some Strix got some sort of allergy to garlic, so.
Right.
And then they were doing these things, and people started to think, oh, okay, well, those are vampires.
Right.
Yeah. I did like it. I liked that there's a boogeyman for the vampires that is more clearly defined. Because if somebody's going to say, oh, there's a boogeyman called the Seven, but I'm not going to really tell you anything about them. I mean, they did actually release a book for the Seven, and there's like, I think, three possibilities of what they could be.
Right.
But I just, you know, I can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So overall, I think that was a really nice addition. It even though I wouldn't say that they're direct parallels to the Masquerade Simicis, I think they sort of play this like a really, really scary vampire.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I'm a monster, and I'm playing the monster, but then there's something that's even more monstrous. And I think those type of vampire games are really good as well. Is that as monstrous as you are, and however bad of a predator you think you are, when you find out that there's something else, it gives you gives your players fear. And even when you're playing vampires, I think fear is a good thing.
Not disagreeing.
Okay, yeah. And we, I suppose we alluded to this in the God Machine when we talked about why they would change from a thing called virtues and vices, because they were very Judeo-Christian, and the world is not just Europe and North America.
Mm-hmm.
So in the core book, they've actually expanded to beyond Europe and North America, and they have, for example, a description of what it's like to be a vampire in Japan, which I thought was good.
Sugoi.
Well, it's not only what it's like a vampire in Japan. Like, there's a section where it kind of looks at, I think, a little bit of the clans and the covenants at different parts around the world, and kind of gives you, I almost saw it like a sample setting, Like, yeah. You know, here's Tokyo, and here's kind of like how the clans are arranged in Tokyo. And I think one was Ontario, and, you know, there's one in Greece, and I think there's one in Scotland. So it's not only Japan. And
I said, for example, Japan.
Okay, okay. Yeah, well, us being here warranted it being highlighted, but just to not, you know, confuse that matter.
I was actually a little let down by that section. You know, when I saw it in one of the reviews about what this book contained, I was like, oh, wow, cool, some information on Japan, but it's pretty scant. It's a really good jumping-off point if you want to kind of create your own adventures in Japan, but it leaves a lot open. It's not really like a source book section on Japan, though.
Well, fair enough. I didn't look at it as a source book section and therefore was not disappointed when I read it. I read it as like, oh, here is exactly what you said, Chris. Here is a sample kind of city, like a teaser, a jumping off point for if I have no ideas of what to do with the city or the setting we're going to put it in, I can skim this for ideas and, oh, hey, that's pretty cool. And if I like that enough, hey, why don't we play there? And then I'll flesh it out more myself. Yeah. So
to give people an idea, the section on Tokyo and the Zaibatsu is 4 pages.
Yep.
Yeah. And the section on Swansea, and who wouldn't want to play in Swansea?
Hey, you might after reading it.
Swansea's it's less right than place. 4 pages, but it would be, wouldn't it?
Harsh. All right.
It's the car theft capital of the world, Swansea.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Now, if you really wanted some good information on how to do Tokyo, then the best thing to do is really just listen to our episode on Tokyo.
Of course. But, you know, I recently watched The Wolverine, and most of that takes place in Japan. Mm. And I like when outsiders, we're outsiders as well, but outsiders interpret Japan or they have that outsider prism, or as Wayne and I say, is like the ocean filters a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah.
And they're like, okay, this is what I think Tokyo would be like, and or they just don't care. They're like, I know Tokyo's not like this, but damn it, we're gonna have a thing. We're gonna have this fight on a bullet train, and the bullet train's gotta be shaped like this for this to work.
Of course.
It's gotta have skylights and, you know, whatever. I was watching it with my wife and she's like, that's not a bullet train. I'm like, yeah, it's got a flat top as well. You weren't complaining about that.
Well, I haven't watched Wolverine, partially because my girlfriend always like looks at the poster, looks at it, then says, "That's not Japan," and kind of like shakes her head. And I'm just like, all right, whatever.
Some of it was filmed in Japan.
Yeah. Not according to her.
Some of it was filmed in Australia.
The parts in Japan.
Yeah. So yeah, no, I liked what they did with Japan. It was kind of interesting. They're like, okay, Japan has these mega corporations or groups called Zaibatsu, so you know something, that's what they're going to use for their organizations, is these things. And I was like, yeah, okay, cool.
Yeah, and like I said, disappointed. I think that's maybe too strong of a term then. It was less than I was hoping for, but it was still a good section.
Yeah. But they did have that. But I think, yeah, Chris raised a good point is, you know, you're looking at about 3 pages or 4 pages on these things, but they do expand the world.
Right.
Which is, I mean, they've come a long way from here's Chicago, which would be what they would present in Masquerade. And then when you got like something on New York or Vancouver, that was pretty cool. All right. Well, that's a good chunk of the setting. They do, of course, make reference to werewolves and other things like that in true White Wolf fashion. But they don't. None of that's really fleshed out to any extent.
Mm. Right, because you're playing vampires in Vampire.
Yeah, and owls.
Or owls, yeah.
All right, all right.
Gonna say the same.
And it looks like we're not fitting this into one episode.
No. Not even close.
So this concludes our review of the setting that's in Blood and Smoke. And we'll pick up the rules in part 2, and we'll start with character creation. For those people that don't want to return for part 2, I suppose we should give a little bit of a spoiler review. So for me, it's looking like I'm going to give a positive review for Blood and Smoke.
Yeah, as from what I've seen so far, it's very positive, and the rules are, there's a lot to them, so there's a lot to discuss in the second one. But so far, definitely good.
Yeah, I'm liking the setting. Not crazy on the Stricts, but as I said, you don't have to include them, and you guys have made some good points on them. But yeah, as Chris said, there are a lot of rules. So
stay tuned. Chew through those on the second part.
All right.
Cool.
All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Idle Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idleredhands.com, idleredhands.com. You can listen to the episodes right there on the website or stream them through Stitcher or iTunes or download them off of DriveThruRPG. You can follow us on Twitter. You can like us on Facebook. You can show up in our G+ thing. What is it? Add a +1 to it? Something like that. You can go to our forums, which are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email because we always love hearing from all of you. Thank you very much and see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Anyway, that's a serious thing.
Well, in the setting, and this is, applies to all vampire games, this is an adult game for adults.
To play not with for, other adults.
Yeah.
Not for children.
So there is a little bit of profanity. The content is is mature, as you know, the pictures and that, so. And the setting itself is a mature setting that explores, I guess we'll say, because mature is the word for the day.
Right, yeah.
Mature themes.
I was thinking.
Actually, I might just like cut that down to like the maybe nothing. All right. Now, Blood and Smoke, the Strix Chronicle, is the latest incarnation of the popular vampire game, White Wolf's Vampire. Okay, I'll do that again. Now, Blood and Smoke, the Strix... Is it the Strix Chronicle?
Yes,
Blood and Smoke, the Strix Chronicle.
Take 11.
Blood and Smoke's the Strix Chronic.
Why'd you do that joke then?
Drive through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
IdleRedHands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.